Yes, we got that.
Okay, good. Everyone, I just want to tell you that you do have the option to send us a chat message or raise your hand or type us a question down at the very bottom. If you put your cursor down at the bottom of your screen and hover it there, you'll see the options that are there. If you raise your hand and we call on you, we will unmute you, and then you'll get an option that says you have to unmute yourself. And at that point, you'll see a little audio microphone there in your bottom left-hand corner. Please, when you're finished talking, put yourself back on self-mute, as it will minimize the background noise and stuff that we've got. Dwayne's got another great presentation for you. So I hope you all have seen that. You've brought your cursor down to the bottom of your screen and hovered it over there so that you see the little chat, the little raise your hand, or the question and answer. Just click on those and you'll be able to do those things. Yes, I see some of you there practicing with the hands. So that's good. And when you send chats, well, some of you are saying the options are at the top of the screen. Okay. On mine, it's at the bottom of the screen. So, okay. Over to you, Dwayne.
Thank you, BL. And I would like to extend special appreciation to the Moya Federation for the opportunity to share some of these different insights. And BL and Rose have been very helpful in pulling together a new platform where hopefully the videos and animations will be clearer. And we would like feedback from members of the group, particularly ones who may have been here in our last presentation, so they can compare the quality of the animations and sound from the earlier presentations to the one we're giving today. And for any of you who have done Moya webinars, it has been a tested and true tool, but we're trying to expand so that more visual animations can be used. But again, as BL outlined, it's sort of in the experimental stage. So any feedback would be very helpful. As you know, the awakening of the higher mind and the intuition may require a somewhat different approach than simply building in facts and amassing information to understand the ageless wisdom teachings. Information is important because when you amass enough of it, you can create techniques, and from the right technique, you can initiate transmutation through meditation, visualization, and alignment. And then, of course, when the transmutation is doing its work, you will eventually arrive at the point of transcendence and transfiguration. So, what we have here is an attempt to use the lower mind, text, and the spoken word to really support the images and the animations, which really convey the greater potency and revelation. So let us begin with one of my favorite quotes by the Tibetan where the Tibetan clearly outlines that knowledge can be expressed in concepts and precepts, but wisdom is revealed through ideas, against which very frequently much mundane knowledge powerfully militates. The lower or concrete mind often inhibits, as you well know, the free flow of ideas intuitively impulsed. It is with this free flow of the new ideas that the initiate is basically concerned, because it is ideas and their right application and interpretation which determine the future of humanity and of the planetary life. The lower mind is important as a preliminary foundation or staging ground in which we can reach up to the higher mind in the intuition. And when we have great revelations and insights that come with the higher mind in the intuition, we have that lower concrete mind that helps ground it, helps allow it to flow down into the personality fully, so that it's not just kept up there in some abstract realm. So keep in mind as we move through this that we're trying to go beyond the mind, but we're using the lower mind to attain that. And that's really quite a paradox. We hear frequently the idea of future presentations of the ageless wisdom teachings. And this idea that in 2025 is going to be a new addition to the ageless wisdom. HPB gave the first, DK via Alice A. Bailey gave the second, and the third will be revelatory, and it will relate to many different areas of research, understanding, and study. But the question that I ask the listener is, will this be simply more technical information, which is certainly important, or will it be additionally new techniques, new methods of presenting this ageless wisdom? And that's what we're attempting to do in this series is, if only tentatively, if only embryonically, try to grasp how the idea of a new science of energy and force, a new astrology, a new psychology, will be required to have a whole new way of presenting it. And to start off this presentation, we're going to share a little video. It's very short, it's only a couple of minutes, but what it does is it reveals what some scientific researchers have developed around a new type of holographic work.
We, Brigham Young University.
And before we present that, I would simply say that holograms and fractals are two powerful revelating tools that have been shared historically to give depth and perception and a whole new way of looking at different things. And so let's put on your headphones if you don't, so you can hear it clearly, and it's only 2 minutes, and I think you will find it very interesting because we're going to discuss it briefly afterwards as far as its potential in the future in many areas, but particularly the ageless wisdom teachings.
They have created a volumetric display that is both high resolution and full color. It is very much like the displays of science fiction. We started this project with the goal in mind of creating the Princess Leia projection. Often when we think of an image that's floating in space that's 3D, we think of a hologram. But really, a hologram cannot make the Princess Leia image, or the Avatar table, or the Iron Man display. A 3D image that floats in air, that you can walk all around and see from every angle. This image is called a volumetric image.
Essentially, it's an image that is taking up three-dimensional space. We're actually using a laser beam to trap a particle, and then we can move that particle and create the image.
We get a particle into the trap by sweeping through the focus. See a little particle like that? It's now trapped, and it's dragged along with the scan of the mirrors, and while it's trapped, laser light will hit that particle, and that would glow because there's all this light scattering off of it. And this is not unlike the effect you'll see with a sparkler. If you move it quickly enough, it doesn't look just like one point, it looks like a line. We can think about this image like a 3D printed object. A single point was dragged sequentially through all of these image points to create this 3D image in space. This display is like a 3D printer for light. You're actually printing an object in space with these little particles. This is not a hologram. We've demonstrated here that we can see it from the front, we can see it from the back, and in reality, we can see it from almost any angle. Here we see the culmination of 3 years of effort. Our display is projecting a small particle focused right here. It's being dragged up and down, vertically rastering this image of Princess Leia. The contribution BYU has made is that we're providing a method of making a volumetric image that can essentially create the images that we imagine we'll have in the future. The future won't be the future without a Princess Leia projector. And this can make that a reality.
Okay, good. I hope everyone was able to see and hear that short video, because to me it defines the way of the future as far as presenting in new and creative ways existing wisdom teachings. I don't know how many viewers have used reality goggles, and they go by different names. But basically, you strap it on your head and it walks you through these 3D holographic images and animations. It's used in different scientific circles. The most recent one I heard about is medical school, where instead of having cadavers that people go in and take apart with a scalpel, they now can strap on these reality goggles, and the complete human body, starting with the bones, can be visually reproduced in 3D, so that you can not only see the skeletal system, but you can have it rotated in a 360-degree way, so you can see it from every angle. And then you can go from the skeletal system into the muscle, the nerve, the blood system, and then of course all the organs. And to me, it's a very powerful revelation of things coming in the future. This video that we just presented is actually, as it described, considerably different than regular holography. And it may be possible in the near future, through discoveries and developments in neuroscience, for people to literally create images like you just saw by thinking about them. And that's another area of research and experimentation that we're going to go into in some of our additional presentations. But I just wanted to share that with the group, because I think it has a lot of potential. It's not just the quality of what we present, it's how we present it. Okay. Now, I know everyone here is familiar with the seven rays. It's sort of required to be able to understand really the ageless wisdom, because the seven rays sort of comprise everything from the highest levels to the lowest levels. But I want to go down through some images that will help you see the seven rays in new and creative ways. And after these different images, we're going to end with an animation that sort of pulls together all these isolated images that we're sharing here into more of a intuitive perception that ties them all together into one seamless whole. Okay, we saw the seven rays that were up there, and we have also given the esoteric colors that DK shared in his many books, as well as HPB. And yet I have to add a little caveat to that. There are many exceptions and extenuating circumstances where some of these charts and outlines that I'm giving are not the full picture, but they give, for the most part, a whole new perspective of the importance of color in its relationship to the rays. Now, on the second chart, we have the seven rays, and we have notes, and those are just sort of like musical scales, and they can be applied generically. Like DK says, the great note of nature, ray three, is fa. But what note in what octave is left for the disciple to figure out? And we'll get into that a little further. But here you see the seven rays with their esoteric and exoteric color. The exoteric being the outer color, and the esoteric, of course, being the inner. And this is interesting because DK says that we have colors that come from the previous solar system. We have colors that are reflective colors that reverse themselves as they come down. We have distorted colors. And we have the colors, the ray colors of each student or disciple, which will also moderate and affect these incoming rays. And also, not all rays are in manifestation at this time. Okay, good. So now we'll go to the next image. Now, here we see the seven rays in a more circular design. And this is important because as we move through this, we're going to see that the rays and the planes, the bodies, they are really spherical. And to understand them on a higher and more abstract level, you have to, as HPB said, realize that all living spiritual entities are spherical. Now, this is just circular, but we're going to move slowly towards those animations that show the beauty of the spherical animation. So you have in the center, we live in a second ray solar system, so you have second ray blue, that center disk. And then from that, you have the triad, ray one, red, two blue, three green. And from that, your four additional subsidiary rays manifest and ground themselves. And so you have in totality seven rays. You have the three, the seven, and then you have the 49. And the 49 are the outer periphery, and you can see towards the left, they're numbered. Now, this is important because as we explore the rays and the planes and a number of different things, the subplanes are all important. Simply to say something is a given ray is a place to start, but until you understand what subray or subplane you're dealing with, you're not getting the full picture. This is pretty much the same image you just saw, except for here, most of you who have participated in my presentations know I'm very big into the Deva and angelic evolutions. And in this chart, and all of these will be available for people to peruse in their own time frame, because this, of course, is all recorded. Starting at the top, well, let's start at the bottom, where you have the ashram of Master Moya. The devas he works with are primarily gold, white, and flame. But you have to keep in mind that if you look under that, you'll see the seven sub-rays. In other words, every ray has seven sub-rays, so that every ray has those seven sub-ray colors or notes built into them. And this is how all the masters, as we go around the wheel, communicate. Each one has a predominant ray or rays that they work with, and they communicate amongst themselves by the subray coloring, because everyone has a miniature rainbow or hierarchy of color built into their group, into their ashram. So starting at the bottom, ray one, and working clockwise, we have the Master R working with the color green, but actually in some respects, we know that the Master R is taking over the stewardship of the seventh ray at this period as we move into Aquarius. But Master R works with the devas of the green hue. Next one up, Master Hilarion, the yellow, rose, and blue are a real 2-4-6 alignment here with those three colors. Master R stepping in for the Maha Chohan, or is working with the violet devas, and particularly with four grades. And these four grades of devas are important to understand because they relate to the four physical etheric levels, higher levels of the individual person, and they have a direct relationship to four cosmic ethers that we will later explain in greater detail, in why color, sound, number, and geometry are so important. So coming around, we have the Master Jesus with rose in blue, but interestingly enough, he also works with the violet devas, attempting to impose not only a new pure, higher quality six ray, but through the rhythmic, intelligent application of the seventh ray. And then, of course, we have Cerebus Bay, next one on the right, fourth ray yellow. And below that, the Christ in KH, who work with rose in blue. The second ray and sixth ray qualities. Again, all of these masters work with all of these David groups or angelic groups, but those are the predominant ones they work with. Okay, for any of you who participated in the first two webinars, you will probably remember this image. And the image primarily was an attempt to show through the law of septenary sevens in the law of correspondence that the physical plane has a reflection, or perhaps let's reverse this to be a little more accurate. Your monad is reflected down through the atmic, buddhic, and high mental. And then in turn, the mental is reflected down to the astral and physical. That's the sort of the order of descent. Understanding that it depends on your rays, but that's the sort of the given outline. And so when we look at this chart, just to review briefly before we get into number and sound, that the ability to understand the personality ray and the ability to understand etherically the different colors of the etheric body that we inhabit will be reflected on the astral, mental, buddhic, atmic, monadic, and logoic levels. And so when you see over the esoteric communities and esoteric colleges of the past, the aphorism, man, know thyself, there's a lot of deep wisdom in that statement, because it's almost impossible to study God without studying yourself first, because you are an emanation and extension of God. And so on up through the different levels, you will find the colors will repeat and duplicate themselves, only with greater brilliance and more power. Now, as I said earlier, there are some extenuating circumstances about the rays and their colors, where some of them change. But this is a good outline, and it's good for me to repeat this twice, because this is visually what the Tibetan meant by the law of correspondence, or the law of septenary seven. Now, to the left, and this is what's new about this image, is that it has the numerical vibrations that are found on these different levels. Now, I have to say, these are actually not the correct ones. H.P. Blavatsky gives them in the secret doctrine and in her private, actually, I think in her, maybe the secret doctrine, but I know for sure in her esoteric teachings to students that have only recently come to light and been published publicly. But if you can imagine a vibration that has 100 million oscillations, like on the monadic level, or a billion, it's just sort of is very difficult to fathom. But later on in these presentations, when we research vibrations and its relationship to numbers, color, and sound, we'll see the importance of numbers. Numbers are not just symbols of things, they are also things in themselves, and that will require greater elucidation later. Now, I'm going to ask the group if there are any questions up to this point.
Yes, you have. Yes. Two questions that are the same, pretty much. And the fuller of them is, what are the names of Master R and S, please? The full names.
Master R and S. Serapis Bay is S, and Rocket C is Master R.
Okay, thank you. Those were the two questions I saw. I don't see any others at this point.
Okay, here's another graphic outline of the seven rays.
Oh, hold on. I'm sorry. I just saw a hand.
Good.
Okay. Justin, Oh, wait a minute. Justin, I was trying to let you talk and it says it's not available because you're using an older version of Zoom. So in order for us to let you talk, I need to make you a panelist.
He can write in, perhaps?
Or yes, yeah. Can you do that? Can you put it in the text box, please, Justin?
So as Justin writes that, I'll just continue. Top left, you have what I designate as one for this solar system. The predominant one ray is the second ray, not to be confused with the one numerically of the first ray, power. And okay, the next image to the right, and we'll just wait for Justin, there's no rush here, so he can continue typing. We have the triad, as we saw in an earlier image. Only what I've done here is I've taken these three colored ray discs, ray one red, ray two blue, ray three green, and I have overlapped them so that you can see, and to begin to understand what DK means by mutated colors, that when the planes or the rays, or when the rays and the planes together overlap, you get their primary coloring, but you also get mutated in blended colors. And this is particularly important with our animations, because when you see the animations, you're going to go, wow, there's certainly more colored hues here than the seven rays. Absolutely. Because you have many rays interfacing simultaneously. Okay, if Justin doesn't have his question yet, we'll go all the way to the right, where we have the four square or the four rays of aspect, rays 4, 5, 6, and 7, respectively. Once again, overlapping and showing the interesting color relationships that come from looking at the rays in this unique way. Bottom left, here you have a composite of all the seven rays. Now, once again, done through Adobe Photoshop with halftones so you can see the additional coloring. Next one to the right, in Adobe Photoshop, we're spinning it into rotary motion. And we're going to explore the idea of motion in new and creative ways. In my opinion, it's one of the least understood areas of research in the Ageless Wisdom teachings. And there are reasons for that. And I think one of the most important and obvious is that it's very hard to visualize the seven rays or any combination of the seven rays if you're not clairvoyant. Because this is where you see how they operate and they move and they have their identity on the inner planes. Now, we're not suggesting here that anyone has to become clairvoyant to understand any of these teachings, Ageless Wisdom teachings, undergo initiation, or simply grow. But if we can take what the masters have given us, who are clairvoyant on the high mental plane, a very important distinction than the lower astral clairvoyance that really sort of dominates the planet at this time, we see the important difference. Once you can understand that everything is in motion, it makes it easier to visualize some of these interesting interactions in a whole new way. And I have found that second ray students, to quote the Tibetan, like to geometrize God. They like to put it into some type of visual form or these hidden principles and laws that they can later visualize on the high mental plane. In other words, if I was just showing you pretty pictures, I would be failing in my mission to bring out the more esoteric side of color, sound, and of course these animations. And then the last one at the bottom right is, of course, full rotary motion of the seven rays. Very important. You see the progression of the primary rays, the rays of aspect, and then spun into rotary motion.
Duane?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, can you go back for a minute?
I sure can.
I still haven't heard from Justin, but Eva pointed out a little typo that you've got there on your four square. Those are the rays of attribute. The primary rays are the rays of aspect.
Yes, exactly. Rays, yeah, I got it. Thank you.
Yep, typo there. So thanks, Eva.
This is important because a lot of this work is very experimental at this stage, and I am notorious for typos. Okay. Now we're going to go into the idea of the rays in the planes. Everything that's constructed on the inner planes is the result of three types of energy. And I'm simplifying this for convenience, but it's nevertheless true. The original impulse, which is the first ray, and its ability to stimulate or galvanize into activity or bring into existence is another way to look at it. If any of you have studied the stanzas of Deanne, the rays and planes, but again, the rays and planes should not really be taken as independent principles and laws merely. At some point, you have to recognize that they interface, and as they pass over and through each other, each shares the mystery that the other needs to complete or make whole. And this is one of the mysteries of initiation, one of the mysteries of creation and growth by all living entities. You got the will, which is the first aspect of deity. You have the second aspect of deity, which is the seven solar qualities or rays. And then, of course, you have the seven planes, which are the third aspect of divinity. The planes and the rays are polar opposites. The rays are positive and the planes are negative. So we can say the rays are masculine and the planes are feminine. Okay. I think we skipped one. There you go. That's the one I want. We're having a little difficulty with our computers here, but with Rose at the helm, it'll be quickly resolved.
You got, Andrew asks if you could repeat that.
Which part of my sharing?
Let me see if I can.
The rays in the planes, or the rays being masculine and the planes being feminine. And when we study electricity in greater detail, the mystery of electricity, as HPB put it, we're going to understand that everything happens out of polarity. Everything happens out of the tension of opposites. And even though tension may not be a popular word with many students who study spiritual subjects, they're looking for peace. They're looking to kick back and to be relaxed and for everything to be at ease. But that is not the peace of the soul, as the Tibetan outlines in his different books. The peace of the soul only comes after you have resolved many points of tension within the personality. And at first, it creates a lot of discomfort, what the Tibetan calls the burning ground, and how you have to resolve certain things on the burning ground before you can pass through the portal of initiation. Okay, so to go back.
Andrew wanted to know the difference between the vertical and versus the horizontal.
Okay. In the Age of This Wisdom, Blavatsky and Alice Bailey state that the seven rays rotate north to south and that the seven planes rotate east to west. But he also throws out a cautionary note that these are symbols of living realities. And that the value of these images is that, in my opinion, they're one step closer to the reality of these hidden truths than merely the spoken word. But they are also only symbols, just like words are symbols. Okay, so what we've done here is we've taken in Adobe Photoshop these seven rays and these seven planes, just like you saw them in the previous image, and we've rotated them. And again, if you look at the very center, you will see a point of pure abstraction. That is the will. That's the first cause. It's the hidden energy that is used to impel evolution forward, or I should say involution, because on the first outbreath, it's a descending, and then only afterwards does it become a reversal of that. The outbreath becomes the inbreath. So imagine this as the outbreath of God, symbolized by that Laya point in the center, which is the point of black. It's pure abstraction. And you can call it unmanifested Fohat, or you can see Fohat coming into manifestation. And what it does is, as it comes down like a lightning bolt, it causes the sensitive matter on the lowest Davic levels to go into a type of rotary motion. Just as if you plunged a piece of wood into a round vat of water. You may not visually see it, but what you have done is you've created a vortex. And the famous physicist Nassim Harriman wrote a PhD thesis on Coriolis, or where movement comes from. Where does it come from? And it's beyond the scope of my presentations to review the stanzas of Deanne and the old commentary and other things, but it's important for you to see that it is the will aspect that causes these other qualities to go into motion. And when we go a little further down in our presentation, you'll see that it's really the first aspect of divinity, the will, and the third aspect of divinity, the matter or active intelligent aspect, that gives birth to the middle principle or the Christ light or the second ray. Okay, now this is the same image, only rotated at a much higher speed. And I like the quote by the Tibetan from Cosmic Fire, just under the image, where he states, or where he says, between the circling, whirling seven planes of the solar system. And I apologize for not having the full quote, but he's simply indicating that planes are in a state of circling and whirling. And now at this juncture where we're looking at this image, I want to sort of outline just briefly the three types of motion that DK outlines in Cosmic Fire. Because in this image, we're going from rotary motion to spiral cyclic motion. symbolically, of course. And the third aspect of deity relates to rotary motion. The second aspect of deity relates to cyclic spiral motion. And the first aspect of divinity, the will, relates to the still point at the very center. Now, I have this as white, but to be more accurate, it should have that black point, that laya point, bindu point, point of pure abstraction. And when something rotates fast enough, when it's under the influence of active intelligence, the third ray, when it rotates fast enough, it begins to radiate. When that radiation is sufficiently strong, it goes from an entity or a life that rotates to one that now begins to become elongated and begins to create the vortex.
Dwayne?
Yes.
Sorry. You have a question. Do the rays and planes rotate at the same speed?
I would say, from my understanding, no. They do not rotate at the same speed. And that will, at some future point, explain some paradoxes and different mysteries around the teachings. They do not rotate at the same speed. And I'll give you an example. DK talks about the second ray monads. And he says that they move the fastest because we are in a second ray solar system. So in other words, when you're trying to understand your ray makeup, and we're going to explore that in great detail, your different rays, if you come to understand the second ray, you realize that these people jump on what I call the spiritual bandwagon right out of the gate, because the first ray and third ray monads, even though some of them may be highly developed, they're in a second ray solar system, and it's harder for them to move through this type of Devic substance. But good question. Okay, now we're regressing back slightly, but I want you to see the rays and planes in as many different ways as I can possibly graphically render. They're all accurate, and yet they all confine and limit, of course, the reality itself. On the left side, you have the seven rays. And you can see the seven rays on the left, I have given it the plus or the positive masculine attribute. But if we break down the seven rays, we see that there are lesser polarities. The first ray is positive. The second ray is receptive or feminine. Third ray is positive, masculine. Fourth ray, receptive, and on down through the seven rays. So when we flip over to the other side, the right-hand side, we have the planes are negative or receptive to the seven rays. But they have also lesser or secondary positive and negative charges. And as we explore how the rays and the planes interface, this very interesting dance of energy and force, it becomes much easier to understand in electrical terms. Now, you have on the left of this little chart the seven rays. Now, if you look all the way to the ray side, the seven ray side, you'll see it's numbered 1 through 7, 1 through 7, 1 through 7, all the way down to the seven rays. And this is what I've done here is I've taken some of those earlier images and I've sort of, imagine you have an orange and you peel off the rind and you lay that rind right down flat on the table. This is sort of what you're looking at here. On the left, you have the seven rays. And if you look carefully, and we will in some of the images coming up, the seven rays emanate from the central dots. They flare out, planes to the right, rays to the left. And this is where they emanate from abstraction or the first ray. And that's what those seven discs are symbolizing. Now, when you go to the right side, same thing, seven planes. But when you look at the coloring of this chart, what makes it sort of unique is that the plane coloring is just the opposite of the ray coloring. And I have written very extensively in my Lightweaver site why I've come to that determination. In other words, what prompted me to say that the seven planes are the opposite colors of the seven rays. And I would simply say that DK and HPB give out certain hints, and I sort of expand and extrapolate on those hints. Okay, are there any questions on this image?
I don't see any.
Okay, now this is a blown up view of just four rays of the image that you just saw. And you can see ray one, subrays 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Remember that every ray has a dominant color and seven lesser colors, or I should say six, because the seventh, or in this case, the first with the first ray, the first subray is the same coloring and it is the dominant hue of that ray, but all the other colors are built into it. It has to be that way, because every ray has to be able to interface and reflect all the other rays, or you wouldn't have an integrated system. You wouldn't have something that's organic and holistic. Okay, now we're looking at an even smaller section, but only here, instead of the seven rays and the seven planes, you see the seven rays crossing over and interacting with another seven rays. I call this the Diamond Sutra, seen visually. And for those of you who have studied Buddhism, know that the Diamond Sutra is a collection of aphorisms and really condensed gems and jewels around the inner heart of the Tibetan teachings. But when you study the Tibetans, sort of the Tibetan Jewal Kul's sort of interpretation, presentation of Buddhism, it's slightly different. And we're not going to go into those differences other than say that they overlap, they interpenetrate, and they blend beautifully. But one of the things that DK has accentuated in his teachings is the study of triangles and how important it is to use triangles in meditation to support not only your own personal and group etheric grid, but the planetary grid that the masters right now have taken the initiative to reinforce and strengthen, and they're training humanity to take that job so that they can go off and do higher things, to oversimplify a very abstruse area of research and understanding. So people should look at the rays and their relationship to triangles in new and creative ways. And that's another thing in these presentations we're going to attempt to do. And the diamond is the heart. It is the immovable. It is the central core. And the rays and the triangles are a very important part of that. Okay, here we have the same image, the rays.
You had another question.
Yes.
Are the images representing the rays and planes moving consistently at the same speed?
No, I do not think so. And the reason for that is because the 2-4-6 line has less inertia than the 1-3-5-7, with the understanding that the seventh ray sort of is inertia, so take that as a additional qualification. The rays move at different speeds, as we shared earlier, in the planes. And that is one of the secrets of initiation, and one of the secrets of passing through the portal is to understand what your rays are, what their colors, what their notes are, and in your visualizations, use those known facts to build the Antahkarana bridge. Okay. Rose has shared that I didn't share, explain this one sufficiently. This is the same image as before, only instead of the seven rays interfacing with the seven rays, this is the seven planes, or else should I put it the reverse, the seven rays interfacing with the seven planes, if you're looking, of course, from above down. Look at the exquisite panorama of interlacing forces. Look at the breadth and depth of the amount of triangles that can be created. In other words, we're going to get into the idea of triangles as they come down from cosmic levels, but this is just down here in our system. And when you overlay this pattern with other revelations around triangles from these systemic and cosmic levels, you just have a virtual sea of coursing and moving forces that are all moving according to the plan, according to the plan of hierarchy, according to the plan of the planetary logos. I hope that answered the question. Okay, now, what we've done here is, once again, we've taken the rays and the planes and we have spun them into a circular composition with the first ray always in the center because it sets everything in motion. And I want you to look at that image as if you were looking at like the equaled arm cross or the four lords of Kama, the four Maharajis. And to look at those concepts that we don't have enough time to really address here, but as living entities that are spherical and they are composed of many lesser entities. Okay, electrically, I want to show you what it looks like to have a sphere, just like the one I showed you in the last image, with energy moving through four points. You can call them cardinal points, you can call them where energy rushes in to create this spherical entity. And Rose is going to, the music, she's going to mute it and play a different, we're going to play a little music to this. I want you to get into the flow of this because this is an image that explains in electrical terms how energy moves in, rotates, and then circulates out. Dots, which really symbolize polarity, how energy rotates around the poles. Okay, now we're going to do vortex rotary motion. Okay, I think I'm going to skip ahead a little bit because it's important that you see the next animation. We can always come back to the text. And I played this rays and planes image, I think the last time we met, but the quality was so poor that I felt it was important that I re-share it. And just keep in mind that what you're looking at here, it's an animation, and this is just a still picture of the upcoming animation, that you have two different energies that are rotating at in different directions. When you study the rays and planes, it's not only the different speeds, it's also the direction in which they rotate. And if you can imagine in this next image that the counterclockwise is the rays and the clockwise is the planes, and that as they begin to come together and interface, they create many, many interesting images, very similar to the petals. And we'll explore this after the image. Now we're going to put music to this. I want this to be a little mini meditation. I know I've blasted you with a lot of technical information, but this is where the lower mind can make its move or a leap into the intuition, because this really symbolizes all that we've just said in those still pictures. Okay, get focused, take a deep breath, and really breathe into this image. Rotating energies going in opposite direction meet, they create friction. And friction, as Nassim Harriman has pointed out, is what causes rotary motion, or what I use simply as drag. When you pass something through something else, the one that's the most permeable will turn. It'll begin to rotate like two weather systems that meet, and they try to cancel each other out. They can't, so they rotate and they create powerful tornadoes, hurricanes, and storms. And in the very center of this, you'll notice the discharge of like electricity passing back and forth. And that's also a part of the two different organisms that in a peculiar sense have now become one organism. In other words, when a ray passes through a plane, it shares its quality for the quality of the other. And out of that marriage becomes something greater. DK has pointed out that when two or more energies meet, light blazes forth. And this is a perfect example. Are there any questions at this point on that image?
You have a couple of comments, actually. One refers to the prior image. Asha says she can feel the divas and elementals from the different dimensions moving from wave to form with that music and video that you showed. And she says it's just a feeling statement from her. Yeah, that's the one. Not factual, but I thought that that was important to share. And then concerning the second one, Anna asks, where may we find the Ray and Plane Petals video online, please? We didn't mention in this particular webinar, but Dwayne shares his slides and he shares his links. So we have this will be embedded in the recording as well, right?
Yes, we'll add it. Because I've written a commentary on it that goes into it in greater detail. And I apologize for the many oversimplifications, because these different subjects really require a greater period of time to sort of honestly outline. Okay, so let's just jump up here to a few of these quotes. And I love this one here. People often say, well, wow, this is fantastic, but how do you know this? Where do you get this information from? Well, it would be pretentious on my part to say, well, I went into meditation and this is what I saw. Even if I did, I would not subject the group to my personal opinion. And that's why I use these quotes. These quotes are powerful. They're written by a fifth degree master, and I am always humbled when I read them. Okay, the vortex and dual rotary motion. In the whirling of the force through the vortex, which whirling forms the petals of the lotus, it will be observed that certain petals predominantly stand out. Now, what's so beautiful about this image that we just shared, and I hope it's of a higher quality than the last time we shared it, because this is the whole purpose of going from GoToWebinar to temporarily using this Zoom format. So I would like people to give us some feedback if they were here in our first two presentations. So, petals, the whole chakra system is a study of the petal formation. The egoic lotus is all the study of the petals. But how are the petals created? Well, they're created because the first aspect of deity, let's take the egoic lotus, stimulates the second and third aspect of deity, and these petals come into formation. So it's the first ray that's really behind all of this, but because we can't see or experience the first ray and its full implications or impact, we can only allude to that first ray and study the second and third rays, which are more within our perceptions or domain of observation. Okay, let's take another quote right here. This is a powerful one. It is simple to grasp the information intellectually, data regarding the centers of force. It is most difficult to bring about the rearrangement of the forces flowing through these vortices and to learn to function consciously through the higher centers subordinating the lower centers or the lower ones. Later on in additional Moya presentations, we're going to show how the greater vortices of the solar angel or right up to the monadic level, they impose their higher electrical energy on these lesser entities and cause them to reverse their polarity and to, what is the dynamic or the interface here? This rearrangement of forces flowing through these vortices. And the Tibetan has given us many hints, and I have simply tried to put however difficultly images that can lead to some kind of visualizations on the student's own part. It is of vital importance to the modern aspirant for the mechanism of their transmutation results in the activated heart, the throat, and the eye, and lead to true esoteric endeavors and to create work on the subtler planes. For the mechanism of their transmutation, what you're looking at here is an attempt to show the mechanism, the inner mechanism of transmutation. Okay, and then, of course, this last one, and then we're going to have more questions. One of the fundamental concepts which is grasped by all magical workers is that both will and desire, rays 1 and 3, are force emanations. They differ in quality and vibration, but are essentially currents of energy, one forming an initial vortex or center of activity, being centrifugal, and the other being centripetal, and the main factor in the accretion of matter into a form around the central vortex. Okay, what he's simply saying here is that there's two vortexes. I refer to it as the father vortex, which is the first aspect of divinity, and the mother vortex, which is the matter. And they're both rotating in opposite directions, and one is seeking to impose itself upon the other. The will of the father on the great mother. But it's not an imposition, it's more like a marriage. It's like on a whole different level. Okay, let's see if we can just... Okay.
You have a question. What is the difference between centripetal and centrifugal?
Well, centrifugal is outward, and centripetal, if I believe correctly, is inward. But I could be wrong. Okay, now we're going to see another image. And I just want to point out one simple thing. Well, these are the three types of motion. And we will explore this later. The first, logos, progressive motion, which in a sense, as humanity understands the idea of motion, is not motion at all. It's a still point, and it's a place of pure abstraction, and it's only when that first ray is expressed down through the planes or down through the rays or as planes and rays that you get spiral cyclic motion that eventually grounds itself as circular motion, the great outbreath. As I said earlier, then in the great in-breath, you follow circular motion that when it reaches a certain speed of rotation, it goes fourth dimensional, it goes radiatory, and it literally pulls. That's the perfection of the personality if you look at it from an initiatory point of view. You perfect your personality, you integrate it, the mind, the emotions, the physical body are all working in unison. They're meditating, they're directing their attention through radiation to the next level of motion, which is spiral cyclic on the second ray level, and that's where you get this is how you get movement. In other words, how are the rays and planes? How are the bodies? How are the chakras? How do they interface? How does one emerge out of the other? And this is what we're going to study through animation and through motion. Okay. And as we get into the last animation here, and we'll have more questions, there's a curious phrase, not only in the Tibetan's material and wonderful contribution, but in many, many other systems and philosophies and metaphysical systems, the idea of welling up. And the two quotes I'm using here is simply one from Dina One. Let your influence welling forth from a steady and radiant center make itself felt in ever-widening ranges of contact. Okay, then a beautiful quote from Cosmic Fire, a welling up of magnetic force on Sirius, which produces effects upon our solar system. Okay, so now we're going to go a question. Okay, any questions?
I don't see any right now.
Okay, we'll go to the next image. Now, this is a vortex with all of the seven rays. They're sort of all rotating at the same speed. Keep in mind our previous discussion how the rays and the planes do not operate at the same speed. And they also rotate in pairs. Another subject we'll discuss. But I want you to see how the outer periphery, first of all, is faced with triangles. But if you look carefully, you can see the triangles can be squares. And this, as the squares pass around, you can see how by passing a line diagonally from one side to the other, in both directions, you come up with triangles. And that is one of the purposes of the Ageless Wisdom teachings, is to take the etheric grid around the human constitution, or even the group, and change it from a square, which is the personality development, into the triangles, which is soul development. But keep in mind that a triangle may be the vortex in its early stages of development. And there are exceptions to this statement, but I prefer to just make it very simple. And that personality development is dominated by the symbol of the square, the soul by triangles, and the one monadic life by the sphere. Or I should say the circle that eventually emerges into the sphere. So you have the seven rays pouring down at the northern point. That's the masculine side. They circle on down through, and then they sort of emerge at the bottom in the feminine pole. Although, to go back to some of our earlier discussions, it's actually going, you could actually see this one going up and one going down simultaneously. In other words, it's very, very difficult to render animations and images that really give a full outline and visual of what's taking place. But what I want the group to focus on more than anything else is the very center part that looks like a fish in the very center. That is a new forming sphere. In other words, this idea that we discussed earlier of welling up. Well, where does the energy come from? Well, we said it comes from the first ray. It comes from Fohat. It comes from some unknown place. But this is how spheres that can symbolize the rays and the planes can nest within each other independently, and yet all part of a composite organism that is fulfilling one greater purpose. And that is probably the most important thing I've said during this presentation, and this is perhaps one of the most important visuals.
You have a question on this, yeah. Andrew says, so in this image, is the vibratory balance point in the vesica of this geometric pattern?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that again?
Sure. Is the vibratory balance point in the vesica of this geometric pattern?
Yes, I would say so. Those who have studied divine geometry know the vesica Pisces, or the vesica Pisces seen very popularly with the flower of life pattern, simply shows that how one life overlaps over another. What you're seeing here is this in more three-dimensional. It's not just one energy overlaps another energy, it's one is being born within the other. It's welling up from within it. And where does it come from? It comes from that place of abstraction, we call, for lack of better words, the place of pure silence. Principle of directed purpose, place of power. Any more questions?
Yeah, we have a comment from Lucy. She says, centrifugal moves out from center, centripetal moves towards center in, I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher this, orthogonal wave, which she says is a right angle. So where does the centripetal force originate from? It seems the movement of the centrifugal force interacting with the orthogonal centripetal force is what makes the triangles.
Yes, I agree with that. And the whole composure is held together by a state of tension, and that is the fact that the rays and planes are positive and negative to each other. And this is one of the secrets of white magic, the ability to use not only, well, let's regress slightly here. DK says that when you study your rays, you're naturally going to study the rays that are more predominant in your chart. But he says the initiate studies the polar opposites of his or her rays, because it's a question, and I'm going to simplify this, of not just pulling away from something, but being pushed by something at the same time. In other words, you can use your opposite rays to break down structures or barriers that are limiting and hindering your growth and development. And part of the secret of initiation is not just to ride your rays into the infinite or up into the soul or the monadic life, but to use that pushing away, or that breaking down is perhaps a better phrase, that breaking down of the old so that you can move forward. It's what I call the push-pull of initiation. Thank you, Lucy, for that statement. That was very, very good. Any other questions?
Asha says, thank you for this amazing presentation. She's welling up with excitement and understanding, and she would like to know what the music was that Rose played and who it's by. Rose, are you going to have the links for the music as well?
Lisa Gerard.
I think that's in the slide, isn't it? So,
yes, that will be embedded in the slide. I could also send it as just an independent file, but I think if it depends if you have a PowerPoint, so maybe I should just do both.
So any additional sharing or questions or just anything that comes to you? And keep in mind, we'd like to get a little feedback on the quality of the presentation as far as the visuals and the animations.
My quality was much, much, much better.
Thank you, BL, because this was a big stretch for Rose and myself to move into something totally new right in the middle of something that's just started. And I want to say this, that we want to make the go-to webinars that the Moya Federation is using is wonderful, and it's probably better than Zoom in many ways than what you've seen here, and will be used by the group continuously because of those obvious facts. But we want to let everyone know out there who's affiliated with the Moya University or makes presentations of their own that we will make this available for their use. If they want to do animations and if they want to do videos, even if they're just short clips, and we're going to share the costs of this and make it available when it's needed, because again, I apologize for being redundant, but it many people may not need animations at this particular place.
I think we all need animations at this particular place. You have a couple of hands up. Let's go to Orest. Let me see if I can find him again. I lost him. Oh, there we go. Okay. Well, I'm trying to there we go.
Hello?
I think we can hear you now.
There seems to be an emphasis on polarity. I think the crucial factor is the neutral point, which is somehow symbolized by the vesica itself. And I think there's a certain simultaneous attracting and holding back of energies there. And somehow it's a crucial point. So I think we need to hold that as a factor in the functioning of this whole thing.
Yes, the neutral point, the point of perfect balance. Okay, good. I want to share, in regards to that, I want to share an image. Could you take me to my desktop? Thank you. Okay, let's see. The image that I want to share with the group is going to be, key charts. Okay. Okay, let's take key charts. Okay, let's take this one right here. Okay, can you widen that or make it full screen? Thank you. Okay. Orest, thank you. That's a very, very important statement about finding that neutral place. Now, what we have here, and everyone here has probably seen this many times, but I just want to quickly, as we're coming to the end of this, explain generically how polarity works during the divine initiatory experience according to DK and according to his teachings, which come from these many, many books he has written via Alice A. Bailey. If you look at this chart, you'll see that the first triangle that has to be sort of initiated is at the bottom and towards the left. It's the throat center, the sacral center, and the base of the spine. Initiation takes place because the throat center, which is negative to the sacral center, which is positive. And what that means is that the sacral center is dominant within people prior to the first initiation. They have a lot of sexual energy. They have a lot of thought and visualization around sexuality. And when you activate the throat center through study, meditation, service, what happens over a period of time is that the sacral center, which is positive, and the throat center, which is negative, reverses. The throat becomes positive and the sacral becomes negative. Now, what do we mean by positive and negative? Somewhat distorted terms, if you look at it from other definitions, is that the sacral center is now sort of not that active. It's passive. It's given up its elemental substance to the throat center, and the throat center has become more powerful, and now it is the dominant factor in the life of the disciple going through the first initiation. Now, this is an oversimplification because the heart is somewhat activated. Some of these other centers are embryonically activated, but that is a perfect example of polarity, but polarity shifting. In other words, there's a neutral place where we can say, okay, it's not one, it's not the other. But all initiation is a shifting of duality in its emphasis. Let me give you an example. Okay, that's what is called the first masculine initiation. Energy circulating from the throat, base of the spine, sacral to the throat, and back. And the more you meditate correctly, and we're not passing out meditations here, that transmutation will take place. I have no doubt the people who've come to this have long gone beyond that. That's not to say that we all aren't sexual, but it's that it's not a dominant factor in our life. Okay, let's flip to the feminine side. What's the second initiation? And why is going from the first to the second initiation so difficult? On the first initiation, you're dealing with masculine elementals and devas. Now, at the second initiation, you're dealing with feminine devas. And so what happens is the solar plexus energy at the second initiation is drawn up to the heart center, and these prisoners of the planet down at the solar plexus, lower solar plexus, because there's a higher solar plexus, they become redeemed. They become refined. They submit to the will of the heart. And so now the energy circulates from the solar plexus to the heart, back to the base of the spine, back to the solar plexus, up to the heart. And this second initiation is built all over the first initiation. It's not, in other words, if you look to the right, you'll see an image of what is called magnetic and electrical polarity. When you're dealing with electricity and you're dealing with the rays and the planes in these chakras, it's not as simple as these little discs. They're vortices, but the vortices interface, like I tried to show in earlier animations, they interface with each other. And they have what I would call, for lack of better words, a semi-penetratable membrane where they have their own autonomy, yet energy passes in and out, back and forth. And so there you have the polarity. But there's a lot of tension. When you're drawing sacral energy to the throat, there's going to be a lot of discomfort because, to quote the Tibetan, you have to go through the burning ground. And what is the burning ground? It's the obstructions that keep you from going through these different initiations. And we're coming to the end right now. On the other side, it's the same thing with the solar plexus. You have to lift up the unredeemed substance of the lower subplanes of the solar plexus into the higher subplanes of the solar plexus and up into the heart. And then you have a free flow. This is your point of neutrality, but not without a lot of work, a lot of discipline, meditation, service, study. Okay, good. I hope that makes it a little more practical as far as my statements around polarity and electricity. And we'll come back to this chart. It's a major, major point of focus because it objectifies what each person watching this presentation is undergoing or will undergo. Doesn't mean that you have to understand all the technical information. That's not the purpose of these presentations. It's to get a general mental outline and then to use the higher mind and even more the intuition and the heart, sort of pull it all together. So if there aren't any remaining questions, we're going
to... We do. We have one more question and one comment. Helen... Helen says, I agree the visuals are superb and that they're much clearer, so thank you for that. Vera, let me see if I can get you.
Yes?
There we go. Okay, you're good.
Yes. Yeah, just feedback about the picture. My picture is fuzzy and everything, even the... It joins the desktop. So I don't know if it is on my end or...
Okay, let's have a raise of hands. How many people were able to see these animations or these graphic images?
Now it's good. Now it's perfect.
Oh, okay. Well, that's important. We want to know that.
Oh, peculiar.
Okay, so...
Yeah, I could see him. I could see him very clearly.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that feedback. Cause I did a little change there and I didn't, cause there's two ways with this thing of optimizing. So, thank you for that feedback. Cause it seemed to change right when I did that. Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So in and closing, go ahead.
You do have one more question that came in between Then, I got more hands up too. Andrew says, how does this representation of the tree of life translate to the Sephira? The presentation looks great on my end. I think her screen, we've done that. You know, so his question is.
This is a great question. When you study the ageless wisdom teachings, and it encompasses a lot of traditions, it's not Tibetan Buddhism, it's not Hinduism, it's not Zoroastrianism, it's not Taoism, it's not Sufism, esoteric Christianity, white magic, Gnosticism, it's all of them. And you will see so many similarities, it really blows my mind, because I've studied the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life, and this literally is the Tree of Life and the Kabbalah. However, the position of the energies and forces may not be exactly the same, but the general outline is identical. You're lifting lower energies to some higher place. And each one of these movements, each one of these initiations demands an understanding of certain laws and principles and in your daily life and in your meditations. Any other questions before we close?
No, the hands went down, and Andrew adds, I'm seeing the similarities everywhere while working with Saint Germain. Thank you. Okay, I think that's it.
A lot of seventh ray brought into these presentations, and that's good. Thank you for that comment. Okay, wonderful. We cannot tell you how much we appreciate you sharing with us in coming to participate, and we've given out a lot of information, and most of it is not really that important. But if some of these images or animations have stimulated deeper questions or opened up your higher mind or your intuition, then it's been successful, because we don't want to disseminate lots of minutiae here. And we really want to facilitate the opening of the heart. But sometimes it takes a little bit of lower mental activity to sort of orientate ourselves in the right direction. So we thank you, and we send our love.
And just a quick administrative note, within the next day or two, we will be posting the recording and posting the slides there on Makara. We'll send the notice out to everyone that it has been posted, so you can revisit both the slides and the recording, and the audio and video will be embedded in it. So those are things that are well worth revisiting. So thank you very much, Duane, and good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you.